seemed as if when I walked in there, y'all were happy, y'all were laughing, y'all looked really good. You were cleaned up. You were, I mean, your hair was combed. You had makeup on. You didn't have your husband's old dirty shirt on. And there was something in the room. When I walked into the room, I felt something. We meet, the group that I'm in now, the Stepped Up group in L.A., meets in a church. It's a small church, and we have three meetings a week there. They had a pastor for many years, and he retired. And this is an older church with older members, little old ladies and little old guys. And it's a small old church, small congregation. So they had a new pastor. And I went in, was visiting with him and telling him all about, you know, what we do. And he got to talk with me, and he said, "What is it that y'all do?" He said, "I was standing out in the parking lot, looking into the room." And in my group, there's about 125 that meet every week. Los Angeles, you know, we got a lot of people to draw from. He said, "I was looking into that room." And he said, "There was something about the room. There was something going on in there." He said, "I could feel it out in the parking lot." "What is it? What do y'all do?" He said, "I want it so desperately for my church. Can you tell me? Can you tell me what it is?" And I just looked at him, and I laughed, and I said, "No, I can't. Everybody in that room," said I, "has been destroyed. Everybody in that room has been destroyed. And we're coming back in that room and enjoying the freedom of being reborn. And it's all due to the disease of alcoholism. And if you haven't had the disease of alcoholism in your family or affected by it, you can't understand it, and I can't explain it. But that's what's going on. We are being saved from the soul sickness of alcoholism in that room. And that's a power that spilled out of the room onto a parking lot into this one man looking in the room, a pastor. And my heart hurt. This morning, right down the street, there's a family that the wife's got black eyes and the kids are still in the closet hiding under the bed, and the drunk is still screaming, kicking the door down. And if they was to walk in this room, they'd feel what's in here. But you can't go down there and tell them, can you? I mean, you just can't. You can't explain it. It's a power here. And it's certainly greater than us. And that's what I felt first, was the power. And then I look around and I find one person in that room and ask that person to be my sponsor. And she was the power greater than me for a long, long time, until she worked me through the steps until I found my own God and my own higher power. And she knew that I had her as my God, and she allowed that to go on because she knew I needed it until such time I could find my own God. I think that's incredible. I try to remember that, to let that person feel and do whatever they want to, because sometimes we need a God with skin on it. And that's our sponsor. My sponsor says to me, "If you can't be accountable to a human being here on earth, how can you be accountable to God that you can't see, feel, or touch?" So I need that power in my life, and she's my sponsor, and she has the right to get into any area of my life she chooses to. Any area. Get in there, and she does at will. Because she cares more about me than I can care about myself. She wants more better things for me than I even know that I need for myself. And she shows me how to do this. So she was my higher power, and to a degree, I allow her still to be a higher power in my life. I need that, because my own thinking is incredible. I can manipulate, or I can justify any action that I have. So I need a power greater than me in my life with skin on today. It's the only way I can keep my ego where it needs to be. It's the only way I keep from hurting a lot of people, let me tell you, because she hurts me first. And then we get the steps. And of course, the steps puts the power into our life. And we do. We start coming to believe. My sponsor said once, "Do you want to get well or do you want an audience? When I was talking to her about something, I'm going to repeat that. I was talking to her about something and talking about it, and she says, Vinay, do you want to get well or do you want an audience? And it's like, there's a power that will take care of this and restore you to sane thinking the minute you stop arguing. The minute you relieve yourself of this, the power will step in and give you some sane thinking today about this subject. My prayers every morning start out with, I admit that I'm powerless and my life's unmanageable. I believe that you can restore me to some sane thinking today, Saturday. I put that right here because I need that, because my mind just goes poosh, Saturday. And then I do the little third step. I love this two stories along with the second step. The first one is the wheelbarrow story. I've heard a lot of versions of it. Mine's the only correct one that I've heard. There's a man with a wheelbarrow, and he's an acrobat. And he's like an Evel Knievel of the acrobat world, and he does all these stunts. So he goes and puts this wire over Niagara Falls, and he's going to push this wheelbarrow over this wire. And he has an assistant, this little helper, this is his buddy, his friend, and he helps him do all these stunts. So they go to the day, and the guy's getting really nervous, and the press is there, and huge crowds have gathered. And the guy said, man, I'm nervous. And his assistant says, but I know you can do this. I have all the faith in the world that you can do this. He said, do you really? He said, yes. I have the faith in you. You've done 1,000 times, you can do it. He said, oh, good. Get in. Now, can you see the look on that guy's face? He might have faith in him, but did he trust the fact? Did he trust? Big difference for me. To trust this big, huge power in my life. Shortly after that, I heard Chuck Chamberlain talk. And in fact, he was at Midwinter Conference in Midland. I'm sure some of you may have gone there. And he was talking, and he was talking about us and the second step, trying to believe in this power. He said it's like the little fish story. He said the old fish was swimming through the ocean one day, and he swam by three little young fishes. And he said, good morning, boys. How's the water? Just kept on swimming. Three little fishes looked at each other. What's water? Same thing with step two. They took off and started looking everywhere trying to find water. Well, that's with us. We're in the water. We just have to start believing it, said Chuck. And I took that and started listening to that and putting it in practice with my life. Incredible. Incredible stuff. Spill this shirt, shoot. Out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 50, here are 1,000 of men and women worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power, and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found a new power. Now listen, total collapse of their human resources. Failure, 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 period. They found a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. I hope y'all are hearing this. Requirements, directions. If we fulfill the requirements and the directions of the steps, we're going to be okay. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reason why they made heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how their change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God today is the most important fact of their life. The presence of this power is the most important fact of their life. They present a powerful reason why one should have faith. If you go into an open AA meeting and see a whole bunch of people sober there, doing well, then that is a presence right there, period. That shows you exactly that this step two works. Just the fact that there's a meeting and there's excitement there and there's sobriety there, period. Yes. Page 50 and 51 in the big book. Please, I didn't tell y'all later. If y'all have something to say or question or you got a better idea than I do, please, you know, hop in here. It gets lonesome sometime up here, so feel free. But not right now. I've got to tell you about this book that I'm... let me tell you about this real quick. It's going to be kind of hard. But you see all these pages here that I'm flipping through? See this book? In Odessa, Texas, a bunch of women got together and Xeroxed page after page after page after page on every book that was available at the time about each step. And they put these little books together, little notebooks. It was their step study. And my oldest baby, Susan, was in that group at the time. And she made a copy. Of course, she got a copy. And a few years ago, when I was, the first time I was dating Jim, my husband, I was moving to California, and she gave me a copy of this book, of her book. And it has been invaluable to me. I just have written on it. They were looking at it last night, want copies of it. You know, I've got little things here and little things. It's my 15 years now, 17 years now, I guess. 17 years of notes and little scribblings on here. And I suggest you get something like that. This is so incredible. I just adore this thing. I just adore it. It is so helpful to me. Make your own 12-step study book. I know a lot of you... Dallas does something nobody else does, by the way, that I know of, is how y'all come have people come do the steps. Somebody come into your group. Hopefully it's somebody that's not boring for 4 weeks. So many of you have this already, but it's really an incredible tool. I just absolutely love this. And now the wife of the alcoholic, this is written. Probably my favorite piece of literature on step two. A great and nameless fear can only be cured by a great hope. When all else fails, when we have repeatedly failed ourselves and failed our loved ones, we can only become whole persons once more by discovering a great hope and a great faith in something dependable. The great hope is often born in us by the example of some other person whose life was once as badly wrecked as ours. When you come into Al-Anon and you hear these people laughing and you hear these AA people talk, Al-Anon's talk, and you see how bad their lives were, and look at them today. They seem to be doing okay. They found a new peace of mind and a successful way of living. We gain no hope from observing the triumph of the strong. Strong people don't show us nothing. It is the victory of the weak who have triumphed over their weakness through a power greater than themselves which inspires our hope. When a great hope is born within us, we can return to sanity. When there is hope, what has seemed impossible will become easy. We have been living in confusion. Our lives will now become orderly and clear. We had lacked direction and purpose. We shall now find a reason for living. We shall enjoy the thrill of setting goals and achieving them. Others have done it, so shall we. That's a pretty powerful promise. Now I'm going to do step three, but before I do, let's take a stand-up stretch, move around, shake, do whatever you do, because I know it's awfully hard to sit like you're sitting. Came out of the wife of the alcoholic, which is a pamphlet. Everybody's going to have to go check to see if it's discontinued, because I don't know. Somebody said they saw it a couple times. It's the little pamphlet, so I'm not sure if it's still out there or not. Step three, made a decision to turn our lives and our wills over the care of God as we understood Him. Now, do you mind shutting the door? There's things I say that I'm not just sure I want the public to hear. I get loose sometimes with my fifth step. Shut that door, girl. I'm Southern Baptist. Let me rephrase that. My folks were Southern Baptist. And everything that was fun was a sin. I felt, as a young kid, shame and guilt. My mother carried a lot of shame. Now, I talk about my mother a lot because she, of course, she's my mother. And you look up to your mother for things and you get your things from your mother. I didn't find out until just a very few years, short few years ago, it finally dawned on me, duh. My mother was an untreated Al-Anon. Her father was an alcoholic. I didn't know that till just a few years ago when we got to talking. The older that she got and the closer to the end of her life she got, the more honest she started getting with me. It was incredible. And the regrets, she started talking about a lot of regrets that she had and what was going on with her. So it was an awesome time for me the last, probably 7 years of my mother's life. My mother died last year. Was it a year? Yeah. I mean, I had, my last several years have just sucked. I mean, sucked big time. My husband died. 3 months later, my nephew was crushed to death drunk on an oil rig out of Houston. 4 months after that, my stepdad of 20-something years died. A few months after that, my mama died. And in 2 weeks, my mama died, and me and my brother and the kids tore down my mother's house of 50-something years, and it was empty and put up on the market to sell. In 2 weeks' time, none of us had anywhere to go home. There was no home to go to. When my husband got sick, I found out that we'd been apparently embezzled. I went from okay to destitute, lost my home, lost a business, lost my husband, and that happened in 3 months. He got sick. 3 months later, he was dead. Shock after waves of shock. Just if I hadn't had this fellowship, because I didn't have a program, if I didn't have this fellowship, I'd have went under. If I didn't have the God of my understanding, I would have went under. My mother took us when I was a little bitty girl. I remember taking us to Sunday school and church with her. My dad was an uneducated Indian, part Indian from Oklahoma, and his religion was whatever the kids were taught in teepees, I guess. He didn't have a religion. I was grown before he became a Christian when I was grown, but he had no religion. And then my oldest brother broke his neck in a swimming accident. And in my inventory came out several things that really changed my thinking about any kind of religion. And it was that a couple of things. The church people came over and brought sacks and sacks of groceries to the house one day. In the newspaper, on the front page of the Lubbock newspaper, said a little article at the bottom, said, "Father swallows pride and asks for help." In my head, that made us different. And then here come the church people with sacks and sacks of groceries. And I remember my daddy getting this really funny look on his face, just a funny look. I still can't describe it today. And he just left. He just ran out the door and went in the backyard. I'm assuming that the possibility he was overcome was going to cry and didn't want anybody to see him cry, because men didn't cry in the 40s. They didn't cry. So I'm assuming that's what he did. my mother sat down and did cry. And they were busy doing their stuff. And this one lady came over. And I'm sure it was just a sweet little Christian woman doing what they do. But she was had purple hair, that blue hair, you know, little purple lips. And she grabbed me, and she was pleasingly plump. And I fit right here. And she was just shaking me and hugging me and telling me Jesus loves you, and I couldn't breathe. And I could just remember Jesus and all this stuff, and I couldn't breathe, and I just wanted away. Her boobs were suffocating me. And I was frightened because I was being suffocated. And I didn't want, and I mean, I just bolted and run. And it was a big trauma to the old kid. I was being suffocated by this, by Jesus and her tits. I mean, it was... George. Can you back that up? Dadgummit, don't anybody give this a copy to my sponsor. My brother was laying in the floor on a mattress, and some people had come. Now, I'm not quite sure who they were. They were either preacher people, or they were physical therapists. They were something. I don't know who they were, but I remember them. He was on this mattress, and they were working with him. And they left. And my brother called me in there, and he said, chit-chatting, and he said, God's going to heal me, and I'm going to be able to walk. And the first thing I'm going to do is chase you around the backyard. And I was really excited. So I went in, sat down on the couch, and waited. I'm this little kid. And of course, he's paralyzed for life. His spine has been cracked in two, and he's never going to walk. He ain't walking today. He's a double amputee today, and he's about this tall, God love him. Got bed sores all over him. He's got back problem, and he's just smacked all the time on marijuana and whatever. He pokes and tongs and dongs. I don't know, whatever he does. Grows stuff in his bedroom. I didn't know what marijuana was. And I walked in one day to her bedroom, my sister-in-law's bedroom. He did get married, a nice little gal. And they had all this very unusual plants growing in their bedroom. It was just gorgeous. I said, boy, these are beautiful. And look how tall and grub. This just, the next time I went over, it wasn't too long. They were all gone. I said, well, what all happened to your plants? She said, oh, they died. I went in one time, I was out of town and came home a little early, unexpected, and I walked in my house with Tracy and the kids, and, oh, Tracy's burning that incense that they're using these days. Isn't that sweet? The house was full of marijuana. I didn't know what it smelled like. Dumber than a rock. If it's whiskey, I know it. Anything else? Anyway, my concept of God was not very good. He made my daddy cry. I mean, disappeared, made my mama cry, and he didn't follow through. My brother never chased me around. And I decided that if there was, I didn't really think there really was. Because shortly after that, there was in the Life magazine, in the middle, there was a 2-page article, and it said, God. And it said, is dead. That was the title of it. And I didn't read it, that's all I said. And I thought, yeah, that's probably a good concept. Probably what really happened, because I know they used to live, Moses and Abraham, all them, used to live, be really, really old. And then they died. So maybe there was a God, and maybe he died. Maybe that's who they're talking about. So I just decided there really wasn't one. And I carried that until many years in this program. So if you don't have a God in your life, there's not much hope. There's just dreariness and deadness and everything else. So when I get here and I'm starting to do these steps, this is what I'm looking at. I don't believe in God. I don't think there is one. And I was told, and it's reinforced. Of course, I've talked way too long. I'm not going to be able to do all I expect to do, which I normally do. I really get caught up in the magnificence of my own voice. I just have such a good time. Sometimes I just forget what I'm doing. Like just now. if you don't believe in something, anything can take over your life. I didn't believe in nothing, so alcoholism took over my life. So to get here and to start doing this stuff was scary, because what I remembered was when you turned your life over, when you went down the aisle, they dumped you in some water and they gave you a tambourine and you went to Africa. I swear that's what I believed. It was in the back of my mind. This is what happened if you turned it over to God. And if you had a record like my record, you didn't want there to be a God. Because I lived out in the bars and I was a slut. I mean, I was a slut puppy. I laid down with any man to fix this hole that was in my heart. I laid down with some really bad people. I got to a place called the Bloody Bucket with some real gangsters. I had not a shred of dignity left when I hit this fellowship. I was a piece of garbage. I knew it. I had all those actions. Decent people didn't want to be around me, and I did not want to be around decent people. So for me to approach God, if there was one, was really going to be a traumatic thing. I just didn't want to do that. So it was very slow, and my sponsor was very kind with me. She spent a lot of time with me. One of the things that she always did is drag out books. I'm so grateful that she did. She would always drag out a book when I came over there with bleeding all over the place. We just talked about it again. I'm going to say this again. You know, when you're reading something that was so magnificent when you came in and you've got all this literature and people come up and say, where is that from? And you tell them, but you say, you know what? I don't know if it's still in print. You know, I don't know if they've changed it or not. You know, and I still don't know if we have it or not. Just breaks my heart. I'm telling you, it breaks my heart. The only way we can stop this, if our GR's here and our DR's here and we send delegates up there that stops this madness of our literature. She grabbed out this book and she said, I want you to read this and listen to this. Yes, we agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we committed to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to really define or comprehend that power, which was God. Much to my relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach, and I say, the approach to the throne. I would not approach the throne. To me, the throne was getting on my knees and praying. If you were down there, he was going to see you. I guess he didn't see me if I was upright. I don't know. But to get on my knees and pray to the throne in prayer was terrifying for me. To effect a contact with him, it's real easy. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to possess a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. Now, this is what was the kicker for me. This changed my life. We found that God does not make too hard a terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding. To those who earnestly seek, it is open, we believe, to all men. When, therefore, we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. God. That just changed my life. Shortly thereafter, I was sitting in the meeting and I looked up at the steps, and this is why everywhere I just absolutely insist that any group or anybody that I sponsor, their group has the steps up on the wall. Because I looked up there and in the last sentence of the third step it says, God as we understood him. And I knew at that instant, it was my very first spiritual awakening. I did not understand God at all, not at all, and it was okay to start there. And it was my spiritual awakening. It was marvelous. She said to me, all you have to do is make a decision to try this. That's it. That's it. Make a decision to try. And this is what I try to do every day. I make a decision to turn my life and will. Now, life and will is too big for me. That I just can't, like, just one day at a time. I can't do just one day at a time. What I do is, okay, it's just Saturday. It's just Saturday. I can do Saturday. So I was talking about her, this life and will is so, what does that mean? She said to me, maybe for you, you need to say, turn your attitude and your actions over the care of God. Why don't you just kind of put that in there when you're thinking about it? So that's what I did, and it made more sense to me. Just for today, I'm making a decision to turn my attitude and my actions over the care of God. And then we talked about the word care. Care. He cares about you, Vinoy. He cares about you. He cares about your life. He has things he wants for you. It was incredible. I'd like to do something. I don't know where I wrote them. God's will. Give me some example of what y'all think, and see if I got any of them, what y'all think God's will is for us. Give me an example. Joy. Unconditional love. Happiness. Freedom. What? Serenity. Acceptance. Serenity. Peace. Being useful. Growth. Growth in what? Personal growth. Spiritually? Service. Aha. Helping others. To do my best in any situation. Excellent. I'm not so bad. And I put one down here. His will for us is to pray to him. For me to keep contact with him. It's like, I didn't do that for a long time. Those are such simple things. I thought I had to know his will. You will be da-da-da-da. You will stand tall. You will never cuss again. You will never be angry at another human being as long as you live. I got a little exercise I'll pass on to you. It's pass on to me. We got to do. Everybody I sponsor has to do this year. The ones in, it rolls downhill. I heard somebody, one of my grandbabies, go, uh-uh. It does roll downhill. I gave everybody little spiral notebooks. And for this year, we cannot complain, criticize, condemn, or compare. Before you do that, write it down in your notebook. I got a little baby that's like, I think she's about 3-4 weeks, and she came up to me the other night, and she says, don't you think I'm a little young in the program not to be able to do those things still? And she was sincere. So I'm have all this stuff, and it's, I can do God as I understand him. I can start right there, and that's incredible. And then Vina talks one night. You know, we go around the room and somebody shares. Vina tells this ridiculous story. I thought, please, Vina. She's always her beloved alcoholic anyway. You know, my beloved alcoholic. There is no such thing as a beloved alcoholic. And she always said that. Vina says, oh, I just thank God today. I opened the refrigerator. An egg fell out, and I grabbed it before it hit the floor. I thought, Vina, thought, you're so stupid. God doesn't care if an egg breaks. Get real. An egg? Why in the world would he give you the fast arm reflex for an egg? That is the dumbest thing I have ever heard. God doesn't care about an egg. Does he? An egg? I don't think so. Nah, no. Not an egg. Why didn't she even tell that? She just interrupted the whole meeting telling that. I wonder if the egg really is really important to God. Do you think an egg's important to God? I don't think an egg's important to God. I want you to know this is 30 years later and it's still down here, and I'm still wondering, did God really help Vina with that egg? That's the first question I'm going to ask when I see God. Did you really help with that stupid egg? I mean, it's been driving me crazy. And I have come to believe that the littlest, smallest thing that enters my heart is very important to God. If my heart hurts, if I'm lacking, God is there. That is His will for me, His joy for me. And it's very, very hard for me to get that. But all I need to do is turn it over, and God's going to do this for me. You'd think today I could do that, wouldn't you? No way. I have to do it on a daily basis because I just can't get there. Many of you know Albert. And he and I had a thing about our kids. His kids were drinking, my kids were drinking. We're just crazy. He called me one day and he said, "No, I'm just nuts. I'm just nuts." And so I do what I'm supposed to do, like my sponsor did. I grabbed a book and we started talking. I said, "Well, let's just do the first three steps together on him." And we started reading this, and he told me about how he did this, and I told him how I did this, and it was incredible. The third step out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have changed it around, and I don't like it when people start changing things around, but it works when you're a sponsor working the sponsoree, and this is what I'm trying to talk about here, a sponsor with a sponsoree, and doing the steps. When I sponsor somebody, they read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they study the two chapters in depth with me, and then they write out first step and second step. I want them to write to me what that means. What does the first step mean to you? What does the second step mean to you? So they do that. Then they go back and they start studying the third step. And then when they get through with that, they write it out and they come and we read that, we discuss it, and then we get on our knees together and we take the third step. But before we do that, they read this out of the big book to me. And we go over it this way. And we change the word we to I. And it describes your life and will. What your life and will is in the big book. Right after the ABCs. God could and would if you were sought. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it to show you how it goes. Being convinced I was at step three, which is I decided to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood Him. In the big book it says we. Just what do I mean by that, and just what do I do to take the third step? The first requirement is that I be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, I am almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. I try to live by self-propulsion. I'm like an actor who wants to run the whole show, forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the players in my own way. If my arrangements would only stay put, if people would do as I wish, the show would be great. Everybody, including myself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, I may, now listen to this, because this is where we really get into it. I may sometimes be quite virtuous. I want all of you to listen to this and see what you were yesterday when you was trying to get somebody to do something you wanted. Listen. Were you virtuous yesterday? I may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest or self-sacrificing. On the other hand, what were you yesterday? I may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, I am more likely to have varied traits on any given day. I was generous yesterday till it didn't work. Then I became a little selfish, and I became a little mean to get my way. what usually doesn't happen. The show doesn't come off very well. I began to think life doesn't treat me very well. I tried to exert myself even more. On the next occasion, being more demanding or gracious, as the case may be, still it doesn't suit me very well. Admitting I am somewhat, and underline somewhat, at fault. I ain't taking the blame for this, kid, but I might be somewhat at fault. I'm sure that people are more to blame. I become angry, indignant, and self-pitying. What is it my basic problem? Not taking the third step. I am a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only I can manage well. Al-Anonism to the hilt. I'm going to skip down here. I am self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it. Selfish and self-centeredness, that I think is the root of my troubles. Driven by 100 forms. Now, get a piece of paper and write 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1 through 100 and write the forms of fear. Get another piece of paper. 100 forms of self-delusion. He'll get sober if I do this. He'll love me if I do that. If I can get my kids to do this, the delusion. 100 forms of self-seeking, 100 forms of self-pity. I step on the toes of my fellows trying to do all this, and they retaliate. Now, I didn't know that for a long time. I step on your toes, and the only thing you're doing is retaliating. Sometimes they hurt me seemingly without provocation. But I invariably find that sometime in the past, I have made decisions based on self, which later put me in a position to be hurt. And then it goes on to tell about how to do the third step, what it will do for you. And you do this with your sponsor. It's incredible. I'm going to read this one little thing real quick, and then we're going to break for lunch. And I'm not going to spend this much time this afternoon on all the steps, so y'all don't get worried. I want to get out of here like y'all do, but we're not going to. I mean, I'm going to keep y'all all day. I think a lot of stuff should be in the first three steps. I always have. But we'll do the others because some of those have to be with your sponsor. So I'm not going to. I don't want y'all nervous or anybody leaving until I get you. I don't have my book. I'll tell you, if you don't have your own book that you scribble on, you can't find nothing. I was with a man called Bill Wilson. Wasn't the Bill Wilson. Talked at a conference, and he was speaking, and he just blew my socks off. He's a big high mucky muck in the Catholic Church in California. Big high mucky muck. I mean, he's going to Rome and sit down and talk with the Pope and all that kind of stuff. Big, big deal. He said this: don't try to prove that there is a God. Let God prove himself to you. Different concept. And then he said, I have studied all the books of Rome, all